Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If, though, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. My guest today has dedicated her career to looking for ways of adding more value to her clients and driving commercial return for her businesses. She is Global CMO of PwC, Antonia Wade. Antonia, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Very nice to be here. I've actually done one of your many podcasts before, and I'm an avid listener. So I'm always pleased to be invited, delighted to be here, and it's nice to see you again.
Well, I'm really glad that you came back. You come back for seconds. So it's good to have you here. And specifically today, we're going to talk a little bit about a book that you have been working on that absolutely talks to those passions around adding more value to clients and driving commercial return. And the book's called Transforming the B2B Buyer Journey, right? And the introduction to that book, I'm going to quote it because you describe this as, quote, the book I wish I had had when I was a manager and senior marketing manager. So that's already sounding intriguing.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I definitely, as you remarked, I have had a somewhat significant career. I often say 10 plus, but it's probably a lot more like 20 plus. And I've seen B2B marketing change beyond recognition in that time, and also the respect for it as a discipline. But along the way, I've learned a lot, and I've learned a lot and had incredible opportunities and learned from some brilliant leaders. I've also learned a lot from things that have gone really, really wrong. And I hoped that by putting some of that together, I could help people who facing some of the challenges and scenarios that I had faced in the past, just have a different way of thinking about it, perhaps feel bolder to challenge their organization a bit differently. And so it's meant really as something that's helpful for people in B2B marketing. And it's a reasonably long book, actually. When they told me 75,000 words, I was like, oh, yeah, fine. And then you actually write them and you're like, oh, gosh, there's actually a lot here. There is a lot in it, which means I'm hoping that there's something in it for everyone.
And it's quite a practical book as well, right? It's got some really good practical tips for making the things that you talk about happen.
Right. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I've observed as I read things and as I and members of my team have been on courses, quite a lot of it is quite theoretical, but actually I've always found it more helpful to be able to get, as you say, practical advice, real life experiences, because that I think helps you to be able to interpret it into your situation better. And sometimes when you look at the stuff that's a bit more theoretical, you sit there and you're like, well, yeah, I get it on the slides. It's not really how it works in practice. That's not really how a CFO responds. Not really how we engage with sales. Mm. And so I did try and kind of dig deep and draw on my experiences to be able to give some of that more practical advice. Because if you're going to take the time to read a book, I really want the readers to be able to take something from it and be able to apply it in their real lives.
I think that's great. So the book focuses on the B2B buyer journey. So Antonia, why does the B2B buyer journey need transforming at all? And why does it need transforming now?
Thank you. Well, I actually begin and end the book with two slightly different provocations, but that probably sets it in context. The first is that, you know, for a long time, we've had this concept of a marketing funnel, which actually is quite unhelpful in B2B. You know, the idea of a buyer or a singular set of people going through a series of linear choices, narrowing down at each phase, just isn't the reality of how people buy today. We see in B2B, particularly for the larger, more complicated sales, Many, many people involved. The people involved are not the same at each part of the buying process. We see individuals involved in a number of decision-making fora across their business, where sometimes they're the primary buyer, sometimes they're influencing the purchase, sometimes they're there as an SME. So it's much, much more complicated than the sort of funnel suggests. The other reason why the funnel is not that helpful is that it pushes you into a way of thinking about metrics, which is also can mean that you're making some false trade-offs. For example, I take on this idea of brand versus demand generation. Actually, in professional services, we see that having a strong brand is as helpful at the point of making a decision as it is way, way up the traditional funnel. So this idea that there's a marketing motion handing over to another, again, I feel it like is quite unhelpful. And so instead I suggest a framework, because a framework kind of has more of the sense that you kind of are moving through it, but you might be coming in and out of it at different times. And it also sort of doesn't imply that people move in a logical sequence, because actually they don't in B2B. I end with a slightly different provocation, and this is more into a marketing context, market context, where we see the way that people are buying has changed. So it's much more multi-channel. Your listeners will have heard a lot, read a lot about the fact that people are going much further through the process using digital channels. People are looking to expecting actually brands to show up in a way that is relevant to them as employees of the company that they work in, as members of a buying group, and as individuals with their own preferences and needs. And so I suggest that the if you look at those trends, you start to think about, well, where is that going to actually take B2B marketing? One of the things that I end with is my belief that the most successful B2B companies of the future will be those where marketing sets the client experience and sales services it. And that is a radical shift and departure from the very traditional B2B model, which is effectively that sales owns the client experience, dictates it to marketing, and marketing supports it in that, in some way. So because of those trends and shifts that we see, I think that you have to challenge some of these preconceived norms about what marketing's doing for an organization. And that's why I felt we needed a book like this. And that's also why I felt like we needed it now.
And the funnel, the traditional funnel, has a real value associated to it in terms of the way that marketers had looked previously at the way that clients go down it. But it's also a way that marketers have traditionally sold in what marketing does to, let's call them the not we, the people who haven't really gotten the hang of what business marketing is actually all about. So do you think that we should kind of disregard the old funnel completely, even as a tool for explaining to people what marketing is about?
Well, look, I mean, it depends on your organization, I guess. But in my experience, the marketing funnel has never helped me explain what marketing's doing for a business. And I actually think agreeing with the business, what are the buying phases? Like, what are the phases that a buyer is going through? And then trying to map out what are their needs at each of those phases. Very human-centric design principles, but what are they trying to do? What's the job to be done? Who actually is in each of those pieces? And then how do you best respond to their needs in a way that puts you above and ahead of your competitive set? Feels to me like a better way of talking to the business about what marketing can help them to do than a marketing funnel, which honestly, most CFOs I come across, you have to explain the concept of the funnel, and then by then you're then... So I would challenge a little bit how helpful it is, because the better you can align to what the buyer's process is, the more likely you and sales are to be talking in the same language, and the more likely you are to be able to help the organization really challenge themselves about what are you asking your marketing dollars to do, and are you putting them in the right place given what your buyers are trying to do, and where your organization's really good at servicing those buyer needs versus where your organization might not be so good at servicing those buyer needs, because that's where you should put your dollars. I think the other thing that the funnel does mean for some marketers is it just holds them into a kind of annual cycle of rinse and repeat on the tactics, versus having a very strategic conversation, which is all of these things are a choice, but you have some hard choices to make about where that marketing dollar pound will service you best and over what time horizon. Again, I think a funnel pushes you into a quarterly and yearly metrics cycle, which is fine for some businesses. It's very challenging for other businesses because you're not asking marketing to deliver returns in a quarterly way. But a funnel sort of supports that way of thinking about returns, which again, when I talk to marketers, that's one of the areas they struggle with the most, which is how do I talk to the business about when do we get ROI? What does it look like? How should it look? And it's like, well, if the funnel was so effective at explaining what marketing did, you wouldn't still be having these problems.
For sure. And you in that answer, you've also covered a little bit, I think, how you propose marketers should look at the buyer journey going forward.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll just dig into, if you permit me, just give a couple of minutes about what the framework kind of entails, because that's sort of how just explains sort of how I think that marketers should be thinking about it. So in the framework, I suggest that for complicated and ambiguous problems that buyers have where they're looking to buy complicated multi-year solutions, they usually typically it starts with somebody in a senior role. I call them horizon scanners, who are just looking to see what are the opportunities and threats for my business. They're not looking to buy anything. They're not looking to be sold anything. They're not really necessarily looking for specific solution-led ideas. They're just looking for information, insights. At a certain point, they will then start to say, maybe I need to do something different to what I do today. I call those people explorers. And there, they're also looking for ideas and opinions, but probably in a bit more of a specific, targeted way, rather than looking at the massive macro. They're starting to get into, okay, well, what might I need to do differently in terms of workforce attraction? Or what might I need to do differently in terms of thinking about how my location strategy maps with what's going on in the world from a climate perspective, right? So start to get a little bit more focused in terms of what they're looking at.
Okay.
Then decide that they're going to do something. And that, you know, they'll have probably talked to the board, made a business case to at least explore whether they need to do something. That's why I call that phase the explorer phase. And then they're starting to say, okay, well, what actually do we need to do? And I call that the hunter phase. So they're in the market, yes, still looking for ideas and opinions, but much more specifically into the job that they're trying to do, because they're trying to form a business case, which typically they'll go to the board to do. Now, in that hunter phase, actually, if it is a less ambiguous problem, if it is much better defined, people will come in just at that hunter phase. So they might say, well, it might be something, for example, that they bought a number of times before. They might be required by regulation to do something. It might be something they have to buy every few years. So people come in with a well-defined problem. So you can think about the first three phases of the buyer journey as buyers going from having very highly ambiguous problems to people to buyers having a very clear set of problems. Mm. In each one of those three phases, I have seen throughout my career that it's not the same group of people in each of those three phases. Often things are delegated. Sometimes it's not going to be the CEO who's writing the RFI or RFP, right? So the idea that it's the same person or group of people just isn't right. It's the same group of people, as in they're all employed by the same company, but it's not the same group of people doing this work. Once they've sort of hunted down what they want to do, they'll put it into a really specific kind of request out for information into the market. I call that active buyers. That's where they're really comparing suppliers together. And then they transfer into being a client. And at a client level, they want to develop a loyal, trusted relationship with the people who are supplying them. They want to know that you can do the job and build a great rapport around that. And they might want to work with you to work with that supplier to do other things, because they know that they can work really effectively with that supplier. Often big B2B companies in particular are offering a breadth of services. Then you think about the marketer. What's the marketer's job? So sort of outline what's the buyer trying to do. When that horizon scanning phase, the marketer's job, or I should say the organization, because actually what I say is that marketing and sales are sort of sharing this through the framework. But the marketing and sales organizations in Horizon Scanner are trying to put their thought leadership and content and brand out there in a way that allows them to be easily discovered, easily found, and aligns them. And maybe provokes the buyer a little bit around what they're doing and how they're doing it. Once you get to the explorer phase, you want to be starting to position your experts so you can show that you have the expertise to help the buyer to do this well. All of that time, we see more and more in B2B buying, that part that was thought to be owned by sales, we see buyers not wanting to incur what I call the debt of obligation. They just want to serve that themselves. And so that's where marketing really steps up into all of the digital channels, all of the events, all of the partnerships that we have to put thought leadership in front of the client in a way that it's where they are, but it doesn't involve a sort of sales phone call. Once you're getting into the hunter phase, client needs information, like it needs quite specific information. And then once you get into active buyer phase and you're into bid, on both of those, you're trying to distance yourself from your competitors. So being very sharp about your differentiation. And then once your buyer is a client, you either want to build loyalty. And in the book, I talk about how do you think about driving loyalty and then advocacy to help you to win new buyers through the rest of the framework. I also offer how do you take the framework and adapt it for an existing client so that you're still going through the framework, we're still thinking about the framework, but adapting it because that client already knows you. And that's all to attract wallet share. Like you want to increase your share of wallet, increase the breadth of services that you sell. So a little bit of a long answer to the question, and sorry for that, Dave, but it's just in terms of how the marketer sees it, you've got to start with what the buyer is trying to do and then think about how marketing is servicing that. And then, as I say, you've got choices about where you want to put your dollars, because what marketing needs to do for you will be quite varied depending on how well your organization is able to service that to buyer phase, the explorer phase, the client phase.
And again, you've kind of hinted almost onto my next question already, but maybe we could say a little bit more about how targeting and marketing change as you move from, just being responding to a horizon scanner all the way through to an active buyer.
Yeah, so again, in the book, and sorry, you shouldn't send me the questions in advance, should you? Because then I'm trying to answer them all at once. That's my fault for being good at doing my homework. But the
it looks like you're just super prescient.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
So within each of those parts of the framework, the people involved might be very different. Now they might not, but they might be very different. And so we shouldn't assume that they are, because if you come in at a active buyer phase and you haven't been involved throughout the framework, you might need a different set of information. So that's something that I suggest to marketers. You really work with sales, quite strategic conversation, to map out your own version of that framework and to decide, who do you think's in each part of the framework and what are they trying to achieve? One of the other things I talk about is how do you bring it together and design marketing plans and campaigns with that framework in mind? And how do you agree with the sales organization that people are on the move from one part of the framework to the next? And if you start to design your campaign so you get that insight baked into it, because you know the signals that you're looking for, that will help you to make more money out of marketing. And my fundamental belief is that marketing should make you money, not cost you money, as you well know. We've talked about that before. But I think that being really clear about that and thinking through not just what are we doing from marketing in order to achieve what we need to achieve in each stage of the framework, but what are the signals that we're looking for that somebody's on the move? That's extremely helpful to sales and also extremely helpful to marketing, because you can decide between you where do you want a sales intervention to be? Where's the most appropriate place? So as I said, because it's not a funnel, because it's a different way of thinking about it, it actually does require you to have quite a thoughtful conversation with your organization, whether it's your account teams or sales, to define that for yourselves. But I think that also helps you to build a better partnership.
Okay. And where does brand come into all of this?
Yeah, so... I mentioned it before, one of my sort of pet peeves is this idea that you have brand marketing or demand generation marketing. I sort of don't really believe that that's true. All marketing should be generating demand and brand should help you across the whole piece. So what I do in the book is I take the framework and I talk about what is brand doing for you at each point in the framework, and what are the benefits of investing in brand at each point of the framework. As I mentioned before, having a strong brand and promoting the strength of your brand might actually help you more in decreasing time in pipeline than it does in attracting new buyers. It might really, really help you to develop a lot of brand loyalty with your existing clients, because you're more likely to sell more work. And a part of understanding brand isn't a B2C environment and B2B, it's a lot about how well understood is your brand. And actually, by investing in that with your existing clients, it might really help you to sell a lot more work with your existing clients. And as many of us in B2B know, that's where a lot of your future revenue is going to come from. So I don't really think about brand as being something that's just, and that, you know, we were to use the funnel analogy, top of funnel. It's helping you all the way through. It's just doing something slightly different for you. So again, you have to make a choice about where are you making brand type investments, because against the framework, what are you trying to achieve? The other thing that I talk about is, how do you think about within the framework, which levers do you want to pull in brand? Because sometimes it might be about kind of advertising. Sometimes it might be about cleaning up your brand architecture. Sometimes it might be around sponsorships. But those things are doing slightly different things for you again, depending on which bit of the framework are you using your brand investment to help you to solve for.
So that's a really interesting point. And this week, I can think of several times where I've been challenged as to, well, Dave, is your marketing here about brand or is it about demand generation? And I kind of think, well, it's both. So it's really, really good to hear that. So I'm given that you've been preempting all of my questions with your thoughts, I'm going to ask you an off-piste question. Yeah. So I'm interested in how much you think your model applies across sectors, because if I look at your background, if you don't mind me saying, is quite strongly B2B service oriented. You know, I'm thinking of not just your current role at PwC, but previous roles at kind of the likes of Capita and Accenture. So how much is this a model, how much is this a buyer journey for B2B service as opposed to other types of market?
I don't mind you saying that about my CV, because it's true. That you're allowed to say things that are true. It's very interesting. So I'm lucky enough in my role, and have always been very kind of connected into the B2B marketing community in the big. And I should say, by the way, I also spent some time at Thomson Reuters, which is a bit more into the B2B products.
I deliberately left
that. I have got some experience, and actually quite a lot of what I learned that I've been able to apply into the services environment actually came from that product experience. Very helpful. But I'm lucky enough, I've got a pretty expansive network of B2B marketers at all levels, including CMO, obviously. And I think that I would say that whilst some parts of it may not be that relevant, some of the parts, particularly in the latter part of the book, may well be. So, for example, and by the way, it's probably not a bad idea to think of your own version of a buyer journey framework rather than a funnel anyway. That would be my... But when you're starting to think about that brand demand trade-off, when you're starting to think about how you invest in technology and data and how you use a framework to help you to do that. So you're buying technology in the interest of getting insights about the buyer. I don't think that that's just about professional services or services more broadly. I talk a bit about how do you talk about return on investment? Mm-hmm. How do you think about the length of time you should be thinking about managing around return on investment? I talk about how do you manage your relationships with agencies, which are some of the most expensive things that you might be spending money on. And then I have a whole section on how do you work differently and better with sales. So I would hope that in that latter part of the book, even if your buyer journey framework looks quite different, the concept of the framework might be helpful, even if you draw your own version of it. But B, there's quite a lot in the sort of second part of the book, which, you know, I hear whether it's from my friends who are in, you know, automotive, industrial manufacturing, banking, you know, they, some of these challenges around return on investment, brand, relationship with sales, we all share them in B2B.
Well, look, I think so all kudos to you for writing the book. I don't know where you found the time. It's a great pragmatic user guide to B2B marketing. I recommend it. If people have been intrigued by what they've heard today, how can they get hold of the book?
Oh, thank you. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. Well, you can get it through my publisher's website. That's Cogan Page. So CoganPage.com. It's available on Amazon, in Kindle and hardcopy format, and wherever else you buy, wherever else you would buy your online books. One day, perhaps B2B marketing will merit a window in Waterstones, but maybe not today. But you can certainly buy it online through wherever you tend to buy your online books.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Your normal B2B marketing book outlet.
Yeah, exactly.
Antonia, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Dave. A really great conversation. Thank you for having me.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Antonia Wade. And thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk.